Daniel chapter 16 tonight. We'll begin, as you look at this, you see the political intrigue, one of the most politically recorded book or passages in the Bible. This absolutely, you see all the intricacies of a kingly court like you never see anyplace else in the Bible, just chapter after chapter about little people that do big things. People that aren't even named that changed the course of history, and yet God's name is not even hardly mentioned in it the whole time. It's almost like the book of Esther, where there's all kinds of things that are wrong about what's happening. I mean, in the book of Esther, you got Vashti, who wouldn't dance a lewd dance in front of a lot of people. What's wrong with that? The lady was right. And yet she's banished, and then you have Mordecai bringing his niece in there, and she becomes the king's wife along with a lot of others, and yet she wasn't supposed to marry outside of the Jewish way. You get all those different things, and you look at, no wonder God didn't even put his name in the book of Esther. And yet through it all, you can see how that God worked, even though man was haywire in many things. Aren't you glad that God has done that? Aren't you glad that even in your life you can look back and see how that, my, you weren't really right with God, but you see even then God's hand was in your life? And so it is here, where we see God's name hardly even mentioned, and yet the political intrigue is just unreal. As we look at David's friends and enemies, as we continue from last week, where David's friend Hushai, back in verse 37, we'll see him again. Remember, Hushai was just an old man who David said, hey, listen, if you follow me, you're just going to slow me down. Go back into Jerusalem and just keep guard there. And God turns that into something that was one of the wisest choices that David ever made and that Hushai obeyed. But notice now in chapter 16, and when David was a little past the top of the hill, behold, and this was at Mount Olives, and he was crossing on over and getting on out of Jerusalem. Remember, Absalom was coming into Jerusalem, and so wasn't that far behind. Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, remember him? And remember how that he ate at the king's table, and that Ziba was the head of the estate of Saul's, and that he was the caretaker for Mephibosheth, who was wounded in the feet. And so we see that, but Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him, and a couple of asses saddled upon with 200 loaves of bread and hundreds of bunches of raisins and 100 summer grapes. And so here he's got a whole supply of food not for David and his fleeing people. And remember, they're just having to take off out of Jerusalem without really preparing to do so. So they were needing food and supplies and other things. And the king said unto Ziba, what meanest thou by these? And Ziba said, the asses be for the king's household to ride on, and the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine such as are faint or weak, and the wilderness may drink. So, hey, listen, I'm supplying you as you're leaving. And the king said, and where is thy master's son? And Ziba said, behold, he abideth in Jerusalem, for he said, today shall the house of Israel restore me to the kingdom of my father. And so Ziba is telling David a lie. He just left Mephibosheth behind. This is one of those interesting, intriguing parts of the scripture where the problem never was solved. Because, yes, Mephibosheth was restored, but limitedly wise, and Ziba does get a whole lot more control of the estate at the end of all this. And it's just one of those interesting situations where we see that the limitations of man, even in his judgment. But Ziba lied about Mephibosheth. He left him behind. And then said the king to Ziba, behold, thine are all that pertain to Mephibosheth. So I'm giving you everything that I get given to Mephibosheth. And Ziba said, I humbly beseech thee that I may find grace in thy sight, my lord, O king. Boy, doesn't he sound great. And so he's saying, okay, I got rid of the guy that was my master, and now I get to control Saul's old estate, probably a big bunch of land that was worth a whole lot of money. And so now it's all his, he thinks. Later on, Mephibosheth will get part of it back. But notice in verse 5 now. So here's, you know, just notice all the conniving that's going on. Here, David's running from his life, and you've got people around him that are either his friends or people that are trying to get something from him. That's the politics. It never changes. And notice in verse 5, a guy named Shimei. And now Shimei, David came to Behurim. Now, the one thing about Behurim we remember is that was where Michal, David's first wife that Saul had had given to another man, remember? And then David got her back, and her husband came running. They were living in this place. So here again, David was having to run north. Absalom was in the south, so that means he was going through Benjamin. He was going through Saul's land. And so here you got all these family people and former court members and all these people out here. And Shimei is one of these men that hated David. Politically, he was probably of Saul's party. Probably might have known the former husband of Michal, who Saul had given to as when David had left. And so notice he says, "Behold, from thence a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei." So actually, he was related to Saul, the son of Gera, and he came forth and cursed as he came, and he cast stones at David. Now, weird situation. This guy could have been killed by any of a number of people around David. He had bodyguards, and yet David allowed him to do it. And this guy just goes bonkers, and he just starts yelling and screaming and cursing and throwing stones, all this at David, catching David when he is at his weakest. And notice in verse 7, "And thus said Shimei when he cursed, come out, thou bloody man, and thou art the son of Belial. The Lord hath returned upon thee the blood of the house of Saul." Notice he is still mad that Saul... Well, wait a minute. David took care of Saul, and they lived happily ever after. No, the Bible is very realistic, folks. There's bitternesses when kings change hands and other things. And so here we see that this man was extremely bitter enough that he didn't mind if he got shot by just yelling and screaming at the king. And yet David, knowing the political situation and not trying to inflame it anymore, he was running for his life. He didn't want to pick another fight with Saul's people, and possibly old Shimei may have known that. And so, noticing the Lord had returned the blood. This is happening because of you, David. In verse 9, "Then said Abishai," remember Abishai was the brother of Joab, and Abishai was, he said, "Why should this dead dog curse the Lord? Let me go over and I prayed and I'll take care of it." Yeah, Abishai and Joab were pretty good guys at taking care of things, weren't they? And yet the king said, "What have I to do with these, Zerah?" I mean, that's the first thing you want to just kill people, you know? So they said, "Let him curse, because the Lord had said unto him, curse David. And so I'll take this. This is not a fight that I want right now. And I don't want to go around killing any more relatives of Saul." And so David said unto Abishai and to all of his servants, "Behold, the son came forth of my bowels, seeketh my life. How much more now this Benjamite shall do it?" So here my own son wants to kill me. And then this Benjamite, or this from the tribe of Saul, he wants to do it. But listen, I'm going to pick my fights. And right now, I'm not willing to fight this one. And so in verse 13, "And David said to all his men, Shimei went into the hill's side over against them and cursed him as he went and threw stone." What a way to go. You know, here you got, you're leaving, you're running for your life, and you got this guy up on the mountaintop going crazy, throwing stones and cussing you. I mean, what a scene that must have been. And David never forgot this. And he told Solomon, "Watch Shimei," and Solomon took care of him later on. So, you know, that's the one thing that was resolved. But notice in verse 14 now, we have, notice in Shimei, and the king and all the people were with him in verse 14, came, and they were weary, and they refreshed themselves there. Absalom and all the people of Israel came into Jerusalem. So not, I mean, they were only about 20 miles separating each other. "And Ahithophel said unto him, and it came to pass when Hushai, remember Hushai? That older fellow that God told to stay back. He was one of the king's counselors. David's friend, love that, David's friend, was coming to Absalom, and that Hushai said unto Absalom, God save the king, God save the king. And Absalom was kind of wondering about Hushai, and he says, is this not the kinsman, is this not this the kindness of thy friend? Why wentest thou not with thy friend? Hey, why did you betray your own friend? You were known as a friend of the king. And Hushai said unto Absalom, nay, but whom the Lord and his people and all the men of Israel choose, he will I be, his will I be, and with him I will abide. So here he is giving false loyalty to Absalom, and Absalom swallows it. Now, Absalom was a very suspicious man, and there's no reason he should have, except the Lord has ways of controlling people's mind. The heart of the king is in the hand of the Lord. So we see how that the Lord, that Absalom, as wily as he was, fell for this trick. In verse 19, and again, when whom shall I serve? And he goes on, he talks about, I want to be in thy presence. But then another counselor comes by, the member of Ahithophel, the grandfather of Bathsheba. And remember how bitter he was toward David. And Ahithophel comes by and he gives him another bunch of very wicked advice, but very advice that would make all Israel see that this would never get back together. There was no way for peace to come with one of these two men, Absalom or David, alive. Because Ahithophel said, unto Absalom, go unto thy father's concubines, which have left. Remember, there were 10 of them, and that keep the house of all over Israel. That thou art abhorred of thy father. That was the one thing you did not do. That was a king's harem was sacred. You just did not go in there, and except for a few eunuchs that took care of. There was only men that were around, but. You went in, you crossed the line into a harem, you were a dead man. It didn't matter who you were. And here, Ahithophel was told, you go in and you violate the harem. We don't know exactly just how explicit it got there, but it was enough that the people realized, whoa, this is something that you just don't do unless you are making a clean break with the king. I remember, and this was true with any man, remember Jacob and his oldest son, Reuben? I mean, that cut him off from the inheritance forever. I mean, unstable as water, you know, God called him. I mean, you just didn't do that. And so here you have, he said, go in, and he said, and spread, Absalom, he says, top of the house, and Absalom, remember this is David's house. This was the very place he looked out over and saw Bathsheba and dwelt upon her and sent for her. So the very place that all this got started was now Ahithophel telling him to go and do this, whatever he did. And again, I would wonder if it was totally explicitly open and so forth, but it was enough that people saw that a man was with the king's harem. And then we don't want to go too far more than that and get our imaginations running right away with us. But it was enough to violate every protocol that a politician would have. In verse 22, and Absalom spread the tent unto his house, and Absalom went in unto his father's concubines in the sight of all of Israel, and the counsel of Ahithophel, which he counseled in those days, was if a man had inquired of an oracle of God. So Ahithophel was if the voice of God. People just knew. The guy was wealthy. He was extremely brilliant. He was part of, the king's higher echelons. He had a very wealthy granddaughter or son who was one of the mighty men, who had a daughter named Bathsheba, who had married one of the great military heroes, one of David's mighty men. His father and his son-in-law his father and grandson-in-law were all mighty men of David. I mean, this guy was connected. And yet, whenever David did what he did and killed his son-in-law, grandson-in-law, something happened. And he became a bitter man for the rest of his life against David. And so, again, we see the political intrigue, all these things, Shimei, and the bitterness that guy had built up for years against David, and all these different people that you had the friends, and then you had the friends of David, and you had the enemies of David. And boy, how would you like to live in a household like that? I mean, you know, it's a pucker or a duck. Either you love the person, I mean, as a king, either you puckered up and people hugged you and kissed you, or they, you know, were ready to cut your head off, so you better be ready to duck. And so, I mean, I would hate to be a king in those days, wouldn't you? I would hate to have somebody eat my bread and drink my wine before I could drink it because I'd be afraid of poisoning. And how many times, remember, Nehemiah was a cupbearer. That's exactly what he did. And so the king would watch him eat, and if Nehemiah didn't fall over dead, that meant the food was all right. Well, I wouldn't want to be Nehemiah, would you? And so the political intrigue that goes on here is just amazing. And so Ahithophel tells him something to do, and all of Israel goes, man, this is really getting deep, and we got to choose sides because there's no way that this is ever going to come back together. And so here, civil war was wide. I mean, there's a declaration of war. And so in verse 7, in chapter 17 now, moreover, Ahithophel said unto Absalom, let me now choose me 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue David this night, and I will call upon him while he was weary and weak. Remember, David was weary and weak. And will make him afraid, and all the people that are with him shall flee, and I will smite the king only. So listen, let me take care of him. Remember, this man is bitter. He says, you give me 12,000 men, and David is weak right now. He's running. His army is not together. And let's catch him on the run, and I'll kill David only, and then you could be king, and you'll even have David's men. Excellent advice. That is, you know, one of the things that just made, just drove Abraham Lincoln crazy was that most of the time his generals would outnumber Lee 2 and 3 to 1. And they would go into battle, whether it was at Gettysburg or Antietam and all these other places. And they would win the battle, but Lee would withdraw, and Lincoln would go, why didn't you chase him? The guy's whipped. Why don't you go and whip? And he said, well, we've been so mauled ourselves. Listen, you catch them when they're down. The war could have ended two or three years earlier if the generals would have just kept pursuing. And I mean, at Gettysburg, Lee was, I mean, he lost, 25,000 men. And he went all the way from Pennsylvania all the way back down into Virginia. He crossed from mid-Pennsylvania down through Maryland all the way down into Richmond. He went back 100 miles, and he was mauled. I mean, his wounded, and the supply train that he had was 17 miles long. That's how many wounded he had. And he was just creeping down, and Lincoln is saying, why don't you go after him, attack him? And they said, well, we've been mauled too. Well, wait a minute. You know, and finally, whenever Lee got him a general, he said, there's one guy that I like, and he fights. You know, and that was Grant. And finally, he won the war with a guy who wouldn't give up. But, you know, Lee understood that. But there again, you see the blessings of God upon our nation. Lee just stomped the general at Chancellorsville, and he knew what to do, and he was going after the general, and he would have chased him all the way back in and probably would have taken Washington to D.C., but God sent a thunderstorm to stop it. It's amazing how God does that. And so here, Ahithophel knows what to do. You catch them when they're down. You don't let up. Don't give them time to regroup. And he said, you give me 10,000 men, this war will be over in a week. You know, and one thing, I won't try to kill all of his people. I'll just kill one man, that's David. That's some great advice. Great militarily, strategically, all kinds of ways. The least amount of blood. I mean, Ahithophel was a genius. But notice how, what God does. He says, I will bring back the people unto thee. David, there's a lot of people on David's side that really like me. And I'll find a way to reunite them and bring them under your care. because they know me. And the saying pleased Absalom well, verse 4, and all the elders of Israel. Then said Absalom, well, let me call Hushai in here, and we'll get the other side. Just see what he has to say. Now, there again, why would he do that outside of the fact that God put it in his heart to do so? So he calls Hushai, David's friend, whom, of course, had sworn a false allegiance to him. And Hushai said to Absalom, I heard what Absalom said, but really, you got to remember, oh, David, and we'll just kind of paraphrase some of this for lack of time. He says, but if you do this, you got to remember, David's a very smart guy. Remember all the ambushes he did and all the different ways that he surprised people, and he would let armies come in and then he'd attack them on the side. And so you don't want to do what Ahithophel says, because David is a very, you just think that he's weird, but when David's at his weakest is when he's won most of his battles. And that's true. Remember how many times that God delivered him in battles when he was very weak. And so Hushai is telling Absalom all these things. And the one thing he was doing was buying time for David, because David needed time to get to a place where he could regroup, form his army around him, get his people, and be ready to fight. If he got that, then he would have the leverage on Absalom. But as long as he was on the run and still trying to gather his army and food on the way, remember, he was starving. His people were staked, you know. And so that's the time to attack him. And so here we have just the hand of God turning on a small decision, seemingly a small decision of Ahithophel. Who do you choose between Ahithophel or Hushai? And for some reason, only known to God, actually, we see that he says all this. Notice in verse 14, moreover, it was gotten if David flees into the city, we'll take care of that city. And verse 14, and then Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai, the Archite, is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. For the Lord hath appointed the defeat of the good counsel of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring evil unto Absalom. So here's the one announcement where we see God's hand is in it. And Absalom didn't know that. Then said Hushai to Zadok and Abiathar,